Well, ladies and gentlemen, are we ready? You want to step here? You need to step on the camera and say hi to the camera. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are ready, we'll start on page 47. And we've gone through the history of Jerusalem. We've gone through an overview of all the different sites. We kind of looked at them a little bit. We've also talked about the topography. And last week, we went through all the walls again. So we're on page 47, 48. We're going to just start with the different features and just walk all the way through the book now, page by page. And a lot of this stuff is, you've already looked at it or you've been introduced to it. We're going to maybe get a little more detail on it as we go. Let's bow our heads. I'll pray, and then we'll get started. Father, we come to you tonight in the name of Jesus again, and we thank you for the chance to meet together. We thank you for our country. We thank you for our churches, and we thank you for the Word of God that we have. We do ask that we may continue to learn and grow, and we do ask that we may use this information good or accurately, that we may continue to develop into a Christ-like character in our own lives, in our families, in our churches, and in our nation. Again, Father, I thank you for leading and guiding us at this time in history. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, if we look on page 46, and again, I know this is review, and hopefully you're getting kind of familiar with some of these things. One of the things I really want to do, I've got a set of probably, I've purchased probably maybe 12 to 15 CDs of just old photos of Israel from different people that have collected them. Some of them, they spend a lot of their time looking at these photos and identifying and collecting them, and then they'll sell them. And I've purchased those. What I'd like to do is set a camera up here and just show them right up here. Especially the Jerusalem photos, because they'll go back into the 1850s, and you can see like just the Damascus Gate with just, you know, dirt and soil up to it, and just it looks just rugged, rustic. I mean, like abandoned, and then all the things that have developed over the last 100 years. If you go on my Facebook page, or if you go on my homepage at GenerationWord.com, there's a place called Picasa I've got on the site. It's up where I upload a bunch of photos. You can also see it on Twitter, or I've got a place on Twitter, you can get to this link. But I went online and I just collected all the black and white photos of Jerusalem that I could find, and I probably got 15 different photos of the Damascus Gate from like 1840 up until 1930 or something, in different time periods. You see sometimes they've got sheep walking in front of them, and some next time they're going to have some donkeys. Pretty soon you got some cars from 1920s parked in front of it. You see the different ages of the different time periods. And I just think that's really interesting. So as we get through this book, it'll be fun, I think, especially if you get a handle on where everything's at and what you're looking at. It's a lot of fun to look at it, I think at least. But anyway, on page 46, you can see the basic topography. You see the map there. It looks very similar to this map right here. We've got what we call the Eastern Ridge with the city of David down here, the Ophel in between, and then Mount Moriah coming. Mount Olives on this side, the Kidron Valley, and then the Hinnom Valley coming around. They meet right here at a place that's called En Rogel. This is the Western Ridge, or the Western Hill. Today they call it Mount Zion. To the south side of the ridge is called Mount Zion. In David's day, this was called Mount Zion, or the City of Zion. This then became known as Mount Zion, or the city, or the temple was. And then when the Crusaders came in, or the Byzantine period, they misidentified this, and they also put David's tomb up over here. David's tomb is clearly recorded as being in the city of David in the scriptures, but they found some tomb up here and called it the tomb of David. Then the Jews and the Christians fought over it during the 1400s, 1500s. They argued about who had control of it. It wasn't even David's tomb. But anyway, that's kind of the topography that we've got. If you look on page 47 of your book, I've got basically the same photograph there, but at the bottom I've got those things identified. And you look over to the left in the bottom, you see the Hinnom Valley, and we're going to be talking about the Hinnom Valley a little bit tonight. And that's, you know, it's a steep valley that cuts across the south part and then comes up here on the west side. In fact, when you come in the west side of the city on the Joppa Gate, you're looking right down the Hinnom Valley. There's a road there today. So the Hinnom Valley wraps around the west and south side. The Central Valley, as you can see, has been filled in. We've talked about that over the years. That's been filled in. There's still a dip there as you walk from the east side of the city to the west side. There's a dip, a decline. The Kidron Valley is clearly there, although it's been filled in over the years with debris and fill. It's still very visible. And then, of course, the Mount of Olives. So on page, now we go to page 48. We're just going to talk about the Kidron Valley. And I know, again, we've looked at these photos before, but now we're just going to try and go through each of the sections and talk in a little more detail on it. And in this photo at the top, we're standing up in this area right here. just outside of the Temple Mount. The temple, if you looked right up the right side of the photo, up that hill, the Temple Mount is at the top of that ridge. It kind of gives you a picture of how steep it is. The Mount of Olives is to your left, and I'm looking south as the Kidron Valley winds down towards where it makes contact with the Hinnom Valley down here in Inarogl. To the left, those little houses and buildings to the left of the Kidron Valley in the background of the photo, that's Silwan. Silwan is located over in this side of the city and also on the city of David. It's on both sides of the Kidron Valley. And all that soot or that sand, that soil that you see there, it's powdery looking, or it, as you walk, like walking on a beach almost, is dirt or soil that was removed from the Temple Mount that's been dumped there from the Muslim expansion of the Temple Mount. Or they're not excavation, they're just digging and building a mosque in there. So that's very important soil, but of course, they've done something, what I think is wrong there. Anyway, it talks a little bit about that. It says the total length of the valley is 20 miles. So again, we're just looking at a brief portion of it. But as it runs further from the north and on down, as it leaves and heads towards the Jordan Valley, it's 20 miles. It falls a total of 4,000 feet from the highest point as it continues down running south. The Gihon Springs naturally filled this valley, but the settlers of Jerusalem then diverted the water into their own use. So down here where the Gihon Springs is at, it would just fill this water, would just run out the Kidron Valley. But, of course, the city of Jerusalem, the early settlers began to use it. If you look on the next page, page 49, you can see a picture. Now I'm standing up by the Temple Mount corner, the southeast corner. If you look on this map right here, I'm standing right here. This is the modern city walls today. Of course, they were built in 1530s. But the walls that you see today, so I'm standing right here. And I'm looking down. If I looked up, I could see the top of the temple corner there, the southeast corner. Traditionally, and not just traditionally, but logically, that's probably where Jesus was tempted to jump from. He would be standing up on top of the Temple Mount that's even higher than where I'm standing here because I got my back against the corner, and I'm looking down into the Kidron Valley. And again, that's going to the right would be to the south. If you look at the picture on the bottom of that page, now you can see I'm standing now in the Kidron Valley looking up at the top of the southeast corner of the Temple Mount. And Jesus would have probably stood there when he was tempted to jump, looking down into that great depth right there. Anyway, that's the Kidron Valley that runs and separates the Mount of Olives from the Temple Mount, or the Eastern Ridge. Again, you've got the Mount of Olives, the Eastern Ridge, and then the Western Ridge here. The early city was set up here on the Eastern Ridge. The next valley right there talks about the Central Valley. Just got a brief, we're on page 50. That's just a brief idea there. Tyropoean, it means the Valley of the Cheesemakers. We don't know where that comes from. Obviously, it had something to do with making cheese. It was, again, a rugged ravine like the Kidron and the Hinnom. It would meet right down here on the south side of the city of David. And as time's gone in, that has been filled in. Of course, that's where the Pool of Siloam is at, right here at the base of this. And you walk up this Pool of Siloam Street that goes up to the Temple Mount. You walk right up that Central Valley as you go. During the Old Testament times, bridges were built across from this eastern ridge as the city expanded. Bridges or walkways would be built across this valley, so you'd have to go down and come back out. There may be as much as 70 feet of debris in the Central Valley. So today, again, there's a slight dip as you walk, but there's maybe as much as 70 feet of debris that's been filled in over the years. Then it mentions there about the paved Herodian streets that come up from the Pool of Siloam. Only on one occasion, Josephus refers to the Central Valley as Tyroponean Valley, which means the Valley of the Cheesemaker. So it's only mentioned once in the writings of Josephus, and that's where we get the name from. Now, page 51, the Hinnom Valley. This is, again, a valley that we hear a lot about, or we talk about Guyana. Some information about the Hinnom Valley. It originally means the Valley of the Son of Hinnom. So again, up here, somebody named Hinnom, he owned this or camped around here or farmed around this Hinnom Valley. Nothing wrong with the Hinnom Valley. It's just, again, a valley that dips down there. It became known as, of course, the Valley of the Son of Hinnom. Son in Hebrew would mean is Ben. So it would be the Valley of Ben Hinnom. And so we became in Hebrew as the Valley of Ben Hinnom or the Valley of Hinnom. Or in the when the Hebrew Gihinnom is pronounced or translated in Greek, we get Guyana. So that's how that all kind of works. You got kind of detailed there. And so we call it Gehenna, and it's used as a reference to the fires of hell as Gehenna. Now, here's kind of how it works. Well, first of all, there's a verse right there. Our first mention of it is around 1400 B.C. in the book of Joshua, and they're dividing up the land. And the border of the tribe of Judah, you know, Judah had a certain allotment, and then Benjamin had an allotment, and Manasseh, Ephraim, they each had an allotment. And if you read through the book of Joshua here, it gives you the borders. It gives you from this stone to this tree to this ravine. You know, it's kind of just crazy borders. I went through and drew them all up one time, made all the connections. Real good Bible study. But anyway, in Joshua here, it talks about the Hinnom Valley being at the north end of the Valley of Rephidim, which is where David went down and fought the giants and stuff is on the north end of that. And it was part of the border given to for Judah's territory. Just a little reference here. The Hinnom Valley is negative in our ideas. When we think about it, it's a bad imagery. And there's four basic reasons for that. I've got those listed now. We're going to look at them. The first one is the highest point of the city is going to be Mount Moriah. Actually, a little further north of where the temple would have stood or where the Dome of the Rock is, you get up by the Damascus Gate a little bit further north right up here. This is where you're going to get the highest part because remember, this whole thing is, in a sense, the eastern ridge, and Mount Moriah kind of rises right up into here. So this is really the highest part right here, yet the temple sits here. But nonetheless, this is the highest part of the city, very positive. The lowest part of the city is going to be the Hinnom Valley. And so right away, that has a negative connotation. I got two verses written right there in Isaiah 2, verse 3. Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And again, if you ever stand here by the Pool of Siloam, and or down here in the Kidron Valley or anywhere along here, that let us go up to the house of God or the Lord. It's clearly everywhere you go, it's going to be you're ascending to the temple of God. Of course, up in this side, you're coming down a little ways. But that's just a typical understanding. And even wherever you approach it from, you're still going to go down to these valleys and come up into the city. Well, then also in Amos 9:2, though they dig down to the depths of Sheol, from there my hand will take them. So in other words, there Sheol, talking about being low. So naturally, because the Hinnom Valley is the lowest spot, Sheol's in the underground, it's going to have a negative connotation. But we continue on page 52. Add to this fact that it's the lowest point, it also, as it comes down here, as these valleys meet right here, they don't stop here. This valley kind of continues now down to the Jordan Valley, down to towards the Dead Sea. And all this water will eventually empty into either the Jordan River or the Dead Sea. And so between here and the Dead Sea, at the end of this valley connection here, you're in the wilderness. I mean, it goes into the wilderness almost right away. Same thing when you come over the Mount of Olives, it's wilderness all the way down towards Jericho. So again, when Jesus was on the Mount of Olives and they're coming to arrest him that night, it's not obvious to us when we just read the Bible story, but when you get there and you look and you see this, when Jesus was going to be arrested, all he had to do was just retrace his steps back towards Jericho across the Jordan, and he's out with the Essenes, he's out by the Dead Sea, and he's out where John the Baptist was baptizing, and he could hide forever. I mean, he'll never get captured. So when they came to arrest him on the Mount of Olives, the very fact that he stopped right there on the edge of the wilderness and just waited for him to come get him, of course, testifies the fact that he was going to go to the crucifixion willingly. Because if he wanted to, he could just gone on the other side of this mountain and just took off, and he's a free man. But the same wilderness continues here. And again, the wilderness and the chaos, Leviticus 16, Genesis 1, verses 2 and 3, I just talk about the chaos being conquered there. Those also indicate, again, a dangerous or demonic area. And then we come down to the fact that that Judah began to offer child sacrifices. And, I got some verses there. The word there you can see is the word Topheth, T-O-P-H-E-T-H. It means the burner. And the burner seems to refer to what they would have, some kind of a system, some kind of an altar, some kind of a burning device that they would have had down here in the Hinnom Valley, where the Israelites would have gone and sacrificed their children. And here's the verse out of 2 Kings. He, Josiah, as you know, desecrated Topheth, or the burner, which was in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. So this burner, this Topheth, is in the valley of Hinnom, or Ben-Hinnom. So no one could use it to sacrifice his son or daughter in the fire to Molech. So again, it's a strange word. Is it just kind of like an area that was called the Topheth, or was it a device, an altar, a burner of some sort? Whatever he did something to the area, to the device, to the altar, that they could no longer use it in honor to their demonic gods by sacrificing their children. So not only is it the lowest place, not only does it lead to the wilderness, but historically that is where the Jews would burn their children with the Topheth. When God spoke through Isaiah of the coming judgment, he also spoke of the burner. He says, Topheth has long been prepared. It has been made ready for the king. Its fire pit has been made deep and wide. So you kind of get an idea there. Now you got a fire pit. It's wide. It's got fire in it. With an abundance of fire and wood, the breath of the Lord, like a stream of burning sulfur, sets it ablaze. So now he's talking about the judgment that the king is going to face is like the judgment of Topheth that the children were thrown into. All that together, when Jesus talks about, when he says the fires of Gehenna, he's talking about the fires of Ben-Hinnom. All those come together with the child sacrifice, the Lord himself, in Isaiah talking about it being a place of judgment. And then there's Jeremiah 7, verses 31 through 33. I could read that also. They have built high places of Topheth, or the burner, in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. And halfway through that verse, it talks about the things that they've done wrong in Jeremiah's day. They've brought idols up here to the Temple Mount, but down in Topheth, or down in the valley of Hinnom, they've got the burner, the Topheth, down there. So those things all combine together now on page 53. It's the lowest spot. It goes off into the wilderness. They've got Topheth there. They're burning children there. The Lord is referring to it as a place where he's going to bring the kings to judgment. Well, Jesus picks up on that. And if you read in Matthew 5:22 on page 53, I've got a verse there. Anyone who says, quote, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell, or in the Greek it is the word Gehenna. So we translate it the fire of hell, but Jesus actually says you'll be in danger of the fire of Ben-Hinnom, or the valley of Ben-Hinnom. Probably picking up on that verse in Isaiah where God had said, I've prepared a place of judgment for the king in the valley of, like the valley of Hinnom or the Topheth. And so in 27 AD or 30 AD in Jesus' day, the valley of Topheth or the valley of Hinnom, Ben-Hinnom, was a garbage dump. They began just dumping garbage out. It's on the south. Remember, here's the dung gate. In that day, there would have been another dung gate further south as the city wall came down further, and the garbage just would have gone straight out into the dump, and it would have been a continuous burning fire. So when you look on page, go back to Go back to page 47, and you can see on the bottom left there where it says Hinnom Valley, you can see the drop-off right there as it drops off into the Hinnom Valley. Now, again, it's not like quite that steep all the way around the western side. There's definitely a valley there, but right here you can see the steep drop-off right there, and that would be the part that would have been the burning dump. And again, today, well, let's look at a couple pictures. Let's go to page 51 and look at that photo there of the Hinnom Valley. This photo is taken, see if we can get a perspective on this. Here's the modern city. Here's the old ancient city of David. This is Silwan today. City walls used to come way down here. You can kind of see on this map down here how the city walls would have came down. Pool of Siloam there. This right here is what they call today Mount Zion. Of course, we're going to have to call it Mount Zion, but realize what we call Mount Zion is not Mount Zion of the Bible. David was referring to a different place. It's just stuck, that name. In fact, that's the Zion Gate. It's not Zion at all, but it's just what we call it. Right here on Mount Zion is Jerusalem University College, where we talk about going and taking a class here in June. That's located just outside the Zion Gate. Now, when you're standing right here on this picture on page 51, if I look to my left, I look up a hill, fairly steep hill. There's stairs going up, but the Jerusalem University is right up there, up on top there. This Jerusalem's over here on this side. I mean, not that far. You turn around and look at it. And now we're looking, I'm looking just kind of on a little walkway, looking down into the valley of Hinnom, probably right about in this area right here. So you kind of get a feel for that's what it looks like. It's green grass. Of course, it's gray in the picture. And there's a family down there having a little picnic. That's the valley of Hinnom today. So again, I'm looking south. Yep. I'm kind of looking south this way. So again, there's no burning children down there, and there's no demons running around. And they can see how the city then expands up. So that's the modern city with those buildings that you see, that's outside of the old city of Jerusalem. That would be over on this part of the city. Okay, turn the page. Now I'm standing up almost by. I've come up those stairs. I've gone up the stairs, and I'm almost standing. In fact, I might be able to see Jerusalem University right there. Again, when I say Jerusalem University College, we're not talking about campus, you know, football team. We're talking about a couple buildings, okay? And it's like got a little gate on it. it's for the Western mind, it's like, what? What is this? You know, where's the paint? You know, it's like, it's just kind of, there it is. It's, anyway, I'm looking down into the Hinnom Valley, looking down the slope into the Hinnom Valley. So now I'm looking almost west. I'm standing right about here looking west down into the Hinnom Valley there. On the next page, 53, you can actually see on the bottom picture on the left side, you can actually see the base of the citadel. Now, the citadel is right here. This is the modern city, the modern wall from 1530s. Here's the Joppa Gate. Here's Mount Zion. The citadel, when you walk in the Joppa Gate, the citadel is right here. It's Herod's old palace. It's where the Maccabees had some buildings. The Crusaders ruled there. The Romans set up camp there. So, I mean, it's been a place of fortress for many years. But you can see the base of one of the towers, how it's kind of called the Glassy, where instead of a wall coming down, it kind of comes down as a slant so troops can't run up it. You can kind of see that there, and then it continues down. That's the west wall of the city. Kind of see what I'm talking about? Kind of see a little bit there? That's the west wall. That's this wall right here, okay? You can see part of that wall in that picture. And you can see the cars and the headlights coming up. They're driving up the Hinnom Valley. They're driving right here, or right up this Hinnom Valley right in here. Right in this area, it's grassed, and the road comes in here, picks up, and comes right up here like this. So again, it's kind of a combination. If you go down further below that road, it turns to grass, and the road comes in from somewhere else. And then over there on page 53 on the right side, down here, that's again down on this side over on this west side of it. There's a bunch of graves there, tombs. Josephus records that's where some of the priestly family, some of Herod's family was buried there. Some of the very wealthy people were buried in those tombs down there in the Hinnom Valley. And you can see a little some of the holes and stuff. There's a lot more detail that you can get into down there in the Hinnom Valley. Any questions about the Hinnom Valley? That's Guiana. That's the Valley of Ben Hinnom, Guiana. Yeah, that's just a, I don't know, it's some kind of an electrical cable. There is a cable, and are you referring to what I was talking about a couple weeks ago? Yeah, that's not it. If you look on page 53, you can't see it, but it would be going across that street up high, and it would be further down south. It would be running into Mount Zion. See, that picture, I'm standing right up here. I'm standing up here by the Joppa Gate. There's a little bridge here. The cars go underneath the bridge. I'm standing right here looking south. That cable would be down here, and it would run from, like, King David Hotel, which is over on the right side, and it runs down into the Jerusalem University. It's still there, but you can't see in the picture. Correct. And what he's talking about is, in 1948, there's some Jewish people, some Jewish troops were kind of held up there in Jerusalem University College, and some of the buildings there that still remain. And what they did, they put a cable across the Hinnom Valley, and they'd run food and supplies down that cable from over in western Jerusalem. The Jews occupied that. But this border right here on the left side was under the control of the Jordanians. And on the right side was under control of the Jews. And there was continuous fighting and battle skirmishing going on. And even sometimes they'd reinforce the troops. They put people in baskets and they'd send them down into the Jerusalem University College here. And if you get a certain room in Jerusalem University College, there's a plate of metal, and I didn't see it myself because someone was staying in the room, but there's a plate of metal with that hook and a cable coming right in there. It goes right out the wall. It's still there. They never took it down. So, kind of neat. Any other questions? Mount of Olives. Again, this is just some very basic information, and so we just keep going through the book here now. Mount of Olives. Of course, you know where Mount of Olives is. It's over here on the other side of the Kidron Valley. If you look on page, one of the information right here on page 55, that top picture right there, there are three summits of the Mount of Olives. You can see them right there. I don't know if you can identify. There's one way to the left side, a little bit of a roll, and then it comes back up again. There's another slight dip, and then there's three basic summits right there. Can you see what I'm saying? On my map, I drew like three yellow lines. You see, I would see the three yellow lines right there. Those are the three summits of the Mount of Olives. Just so you know, there's three little summits there on the Mount of Olives. It's a two-mile-long ridge. This right here, the Mount of Olives, is a two-mile-long ridge. On the other side is the wilderness. I told you that. On the other side, it just goes into wilderness. Of course, it's been settled, and now you're into the western part. The West Bank, where the Jews, they keep, you know, building and settling. That's where a lot of the confusion is coming from today. David ascended the Mount of Olives when he fled from Absalom, and you can see why he ascended the Mount of Olives. talks about him ascending the Mount of Olives and weeping, because once he got over here, where is he at? He's running free. He's out into the wilderness. And then you can have the rest of the Absalom story. Several of Jesus' activities took place on the Mount of Olives, and the Bible records that, which of course means now everybody's going to build a church there and name it all kinds of things. You've got the Church of the Ascension. You've got the Church of the Transfiguration. The Church of the Transfiguration did not take place on the Mount of Olives, but that doesn't mean it's not a convenient place to build the Church of the Transfiguration and tell stories. Remember, we went through the Brodeau pilgrim. When he went there, he saw the place where Jesus was transfigured on the Mount of Olives, which is not historically correct, but they told him that's the case, and so he got himself a photograph of it and took it home. It talks about Jesus stayed at Bethany, which would be Bethany would be on the other side of the Mount of Olives over here. It's a 2-mile walk from the southwest corner of southeast corner of Jerusalem. It's about a 2-mile walk. And Jesus each day on the last week of his life would have came up and over the Mount of Olives from Bethany. I wanted to go to Bethany. I wanted to make that walk. I thought that I was kind of geared up for it. But when I got there, I was told that the Jews have, because it's in the West Bank and it's a settlement of the Palestinians, they've built walls around it so you can only come in and out of it through one way so they can keep an eye on explosive devices coming and leaving the city. And so it sounds very, rude and obnoxious of the Jews who do that, but they say it cut down the explosions like by 85%, just simply putting everybody in a wall. You have to go to work, everybody has to go out the same gate. So by the time I found out about it, I would have had to walk 5 miles, come around the city, or take a taxi cab, and so I never made it there. There is the tomb of Lazarus. Lazarus' tomb is in Bethany, and it seems to be fairly well documented that they know where it's at, so you can still see it. Of course, it's a mosque today because it's in the West Bank. Now we talk about the Jewish Messiah. It appears that the Jewish Messiah will return or make some appearance on the Mount of Olives. Zechariah 14, I've got that verse written down there. On that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. So the Old Testament, Zechariah testifies to the Messiah coming to the Mount of Olives. Ezekiel chapter 11, when it talks about the Lord's glory leaving and returning. The glory of the Lord, when it left Israel before the Babylonian captivity in Ezekiel 11, it went up from the city and stopped above the mount east of it. So, here's the Temple Mount here on Mount Moriah. In Ezekiel's day, in chapter 11, has a vision of the glory of God leaving the temple, and it left and went over the Kidron Valley and stood above the Mount of Olives to the east. And that's the last he sees of the glory of God. Of course, when he's taken into captivity, he sees the glory of God coming over to Babylon. That's where you got the book of Ezekiel beginning. But later on in the book, when he talks about the temple being rebuilt, possibly the third temple or however Ezekiel's temple, it says, "Then the man brought me to the gate facing east, and I saw the glory of God of Israel coming from the east." So he would have took him to the gate facing east, the golden gate, and he's looking this way, and he's looking over the Kidron Valley at the Mount of Olives, and he's standing in the new temple, and he sees the glory of God coming from the Mount of Olives towards the temple. And eventually, if you continue reading, Ezekiel talks with that glory or talks with the Lord as he returns. So Zechariah says the Lord will stand on the Mount of Olives. Ezekiel has the glory of God leaving the temple to the Mount of Olives and coming back from the Mount of Olives. And then you've got Luke. Jesus seemed to accept this teaching, or the at least he played along with it and gave us good reason to think that he must have believed it. Because when he ascended into heaven, he takes his disciples over there. It says when he had in Luke 24, when Jesus had led them out of the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and blessed them. While he was blessing them, he left them and was taken up into heaven. And that's what Luke records in the Gospel of Luke, but we get more details in Acts chapter 1 when he talks about him standing there on the Mount of Olives and ascending. And then the angels come and say, "Why do you men of Galilee stand staring into the heavens? The same Jesus you saw leave will come back the same way that you saw him go." And it says they returned to Jerusalem from the hill called the Mount of Olives. So you got Zechariah saying this, you've got Ezekiel seeing this, and you've got Jesus ascending and the angel saying he'll come back. So it seems like you've got very, very firm confirmation from the Bible that this is going to be the place that Jesus returns, is to the Mount of Olives. Now you ask, which of the three summits will he return to? This I do not know. But it's a 2-mile area. We've at least got it reduced to a 2-mile vicinity, so you should be pretty happy with that. So, yes, then the Mount of Olives will be split in two, from the half the mountain moving north and half the mountain moving south, from the east to the west. forming a great valley, then water flows out of it. So, yeah, there's some topography changes. And when you start studying that, if you read it literally, which I tend to do, it says, and Isaiah begins with his book like that. He says, I see Jerusalem high and lifted up. Ezekiel talks about a mountain that had hills on our city on both sides coming down of it. So it appears that at this time, a topography change takes place where Jerusalem is lifted up higher than the other cities. It talks about the valley, the hill country going flat like a valley, earthquakes. And so the whole topography of this area is going to change. A lot of things are going to take place, and you can try and detail them out. When you talk about, earthquakes and things, there's a fault line running right across the Mount of Olives. I mean, it starts up in the north, goes right on down towards Egypt. It's very clear where that fault line is at. So that it appears to be where it's going to take place. When you look at the Solomon's Quarry or Zedekiah's Cave underneath the Muslim Quarter, it's just a big cavity underneath the Muslim Quarter that, you know, any kind of shaking or any kind of major earthquake, that whole area would just have to just collapse in. Of course, Mount Moriah itself is a rock. And so, like, the Dome of the Rock is built on a rock. So it's going to be able to take a lot of shaking, the Dome of the Rock, because it's built on the bedrock. But as we move south on the Temple Mount, as we talk about down here, this is all that retaining wall. So all of that is filled. There's some rock formation coming here, but a lot of that Mount Moriah or the Temple Mount is filled to make it level. And that's why the Al-Aqsa Mosque, whenever there's a little tremor, there's great damage to the Al-Aqsa Mosque because it's just sitting on fill. It just gets rattled to pieces. Where the Dome of the Rock, it just sits there and it's fairly solid. So again, when all these things take place, you just wonder what's going to happen to, I don't know if you saw, we've talked about it before, but I put a blog up just yesterday just put some pictures up on the East Gate. You know what I'm talking about? The East Gate under the East Gate. Like, here's the Gold Gate right here, which was built in the 500, 600 AD during the Byzantine time period. So that's when that was built. And we looked last week at the Damascus Gate about the excavation that's taken place underneath it. I mean, I talked about the old pictures from the 1800s. It's just soil going right up to the Damascus Gate. Today, you walk across the bridge going into the Damascus Gate because they got permission, and they excavated down, all the way down to the first century. And they found, as you see in the pictures we looked at last week, you can see one of the gate entrances that was there from Herod Agrippa II from, 64, 67 AD. That was a gate for people, passengers to walk in or pedestrians to walk in. There'd be a bigger gate to the right. You can still see that there today. Well, now you just swing around the corner here, and there's a gate underneath this Golden Gate. And so when you talk about all this stuff shaking and things taking place, it may be nothing. But archaeologically, you wonder, this gate, it says right there, they saw him walking in the Eastern Gate. Is it going to be a new Eastern Gate? Is it this Eastern Gate that we see today? Or is it the gate that's still there underneath? And we know it's there. 1969, a guy named James Fleming was out one night, student at Jerusalem University College, fell into a tomb right in front of it and was on bones. I don't know if there were like 70 different skeletons in that tomb. He counted them. I don't know. But he took a picture of the wall underneath, and that's been published. In fact, it's on my blog now. I stole it, put it on my blog. Then in 2005, a student from Jerusalem University College was out and saw the slab of concrete that was put over it, the tomb, so no one can see this because the Muslims don't want you to see it. But he moved a stone and saw a hole that showed a cavity underneath the slab of concrete, so he stuck his camera down there, snapped, and got another picture from 2005 that's also on my blog. I stole that one also, but I gave references and stuff. So anyway, you see those. And then someone's drawing a guy. I don't know, did we hand this out last week, that diagram? Okay, I'm boring you. Okay, here we go. But there's a diagram here showing the ground level, and here's today's gate. And then what would have it looked like, where that gate would be, and here's where that tomb sits right here, and that this is what the pictures are taken of, and so kind of give you an idea of what's underneath that. And that's, if you look at the blog, that's on there. But that's all kind of interesting to know that, when that shaking starts taking place, the fault line's there, there's certain cavities, the whole parts of the city can cave in. And if Jesus, and again, that gate, Josephus says, that gate's not from, modern times. That gate's got to be from the days of Herod. But Josephus says Herod did not build that gate, that was still there. So it goes back to Nehemiah's day, and possibly it remains yet from Solomon. It may be the original Eastern Gate that Ezekiel himself was looking at. We don't know yet. Anyway, but now we're on Mount Moriah, page 56. Just some information about Mount Moriah, not a lot. What you're looking at right there, this is a little thing. The picture there is the bedrock of Mount Moriah. It's underneath what the Muslims call the Dome of the Spirits, which is 285 feet north of the location of the Ark, where the Ark would have sat, or where the Dome of the Rock is, assuming that our understanding that the Dome of the Rock covered up the holy place, or the most holy place. It'd be 285 feet. It sits right here. And you can see, whenever you look at a picture of the Temple Mount, you can see the Dome of the Spirits, and it's just got those posts around, a little bitty dome right there. You can see a person walking there in the background, kind of get a perspective of how big it is. But it's just an opening right there. Some people think that's where the Ark of the Covenant could have sat. They've got different ideas. But this is the bedrock. And notice again, that's up in this part of the Temple Mount, so it's higher. You're not going to see that kind of formation down on this side because, again, that's all fill. But as you go further north, that rock starts to crop out of the Temple Mount, or it's been covered up, or in this case, they've just got the Dome of the Spirits covering it. And this is where Genesis 22 talks about Abraham offering Isaac on Mount Moriah. 1 Chronicles 21 identifies this as the location of Araunah, or another reference would be Oman, where David bought it right here. I've got the references here. In 1 Chronicles 21, it says that David paid Ornan 600 shekels of gold for the site. And then if you look over there, Solomon began to build on that very site in 2 Chronicles 3, verse 1, where he built the temple. So again, those are just biblical references to this. And it's really no doubt. I mean, it's not like, well, are you sure? It's like, this. I mean, we're talking about the same place. It's not that complicated. Somebody say, well, it could be here, it could be there. It really couldn't. This is the only real option that you have. It talks about being a ridge. It is about 118 feet lower than the highest point of Mount Moriah. So today's Temple Mound and is 45 acres. 45 acres. Again, I can never remember how big that is. I think this is like something like 15 or 18 acres down here or something. This whole area is 45 acres up here. And the highest place going to the north is still, what does it say here, 118 feet lower, or the temple, where the temple stood, is 118 feet lower than the highest place of Mount Moriah. So the temple did not stand on the highest point of Mount Moriah because it continues to ascend over here. Not drastically, but still high enough. Any questions about Mount Moriah? Again, that's the bedrock that is cropping out, that's got the retaining wall built around today. I know, Deb, you asked last week about the surface. And so those black and white photos, that's one of the reasons I kept thinking this would be a great photo. Because those black and white photos from the 1800s, they have pictures of the Temple Mount. Tourists or pilgrims are taking photographs. And it's just, sometimes it's just rough and rugged. It's a disaster. It's clearly, you can see how they've repaved it with some kind of paving stones. So if you go back and look at those pictures, you can really get a good idea of what the Temple Mount would have looked like, 150 years ago and even before. The Western Hill. Now we're going to move over here. The Western Hill over here, where Mount Zion is at, or the Western Ridge. It was unsettled during the days of David, during the Assyrian Empire, when they invaded. I've told you this before. When they invaded from the north, people started to settle on this side of the outside of the city, and so Hezekiah ends up building a wall over there. In fact, part of that wall, the broad wall, you can still see today. And the book that I handed out last week with the maps of Jerusalem in the back, you can see that little black line right there. Where that wall would be. During the days of Jesus, that is where the wealthy people lived. The high priest, Herod's palace, was over here. So the high priest would live down here in this area here, or down in this area here, even sometimes outside of the wall of the city today. This would be the wealthy people. So Jesus was brought over here for the trial at Caiaphas's house, and then Herod's palace would be right over here also. So this is where a lot of Jesus' trials would have taken place, as they took him back and forth from Fort Antonia, over to the high priest, over to Herod's palace, and brought him back over here for his crucifixion right there at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So there we have a little bit about that. And the next thing is the Ophel. Just again, we've talked about the Ophel before. The Ophel is that area between the city of David and Mount Moriah. The word means, Ophel means swell or rise. It's mentioned a couple times in Scripture, mainly being there for where the wall was broken down and the city was expanded, or the wall was put back together. That is the offal right there. Okay, that's that. We're going to skip the next part about Salem, and we're going to go page 61. And again, we've talked about this or looked at these pictures before, but we're going to go through a little more detail here this time. Any questions so far? Yes, sir. Please. I don't know of any, how it would relate, but the same thing will happen. Moses, the rock split, water came out. In this case, the mountain's going to split, or the hill, the ridge is going to split, and water's going to flow. The water's going to flow out of the Temple Mount. It's going to end up connecting, it talks about the Great Sea to the Dead Sea. So it's going to connect the Mediterranean Sea to the Dead Sea. I don't know of any connection other than it's the same type of thing. Water's coming out of a rock after it splits. Why, are you thinking something? You got it. Yeah. I guess one simple connection would be God provided water for the people in the wilderness. And in this case, the water is going to come out. It's going to talk about it being living water coming out of the temple. And that's going to bring the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is going to come to life. There's going to be fish in there. There will be fishing down there, it talks about. And it's going to transform Jerusalem into a seaport city. I mean, they're going to have access with the ships. I mean, it's going to bring life and prosperity to the city. Just like the water brought life and success or life and longevity to the people in the wilderness. But yeah, that's a good observation. Any other thoughts before we move on to the Milo? I don't know for sure. You got the Gihon Springs, of course, we know right here. So there is water. We also know under Mount Moriah or under the Temple Mount, one of the things you'll see on the Temple Mount is that, at least I didn't understand what they were, but there are cisterns underneath underneath the Temple Mount. And so there's certain wells. And people ask this question, they're doing all the sacrifice on the Temple Mount. They had to have some kind of supply of water. And so there was supplies of water. A lot of it was aqueducts or just cisterns that would collect rainwater. So there's, let me see if I can find a picture here. I'm thinking, going back, here's the Cardo. I'm getting close. I'm looking for there's some aqueducts. Okay, here. Go to page 129, 130. There we go. Oh, go to page 130, 131. Actually, if you want to go to, yeah, that's fine. But I'm walking up, Tony and I are walking up the Western Wall Tunnels right up in here, okay? And when you get up into here, there's aqueducts that have been covered up, but you can still see the aqueducts where water would flow, and the walls are smooth because the water flows from the Hasmonean times. And there's still a pools of water. This is located right here. It used to be a moat. They used it as a moat for protection. Again, this is Fort Antonia was here, and they'd use that a moat for protection. But then during Hadrian's day, they built an arch over it to support a market up on top. And what you're looking at on page 131 right there, well, 130, you're walking down, that's kind of the aqueduct right in there where the water would flow. And they'd collect rainwater and different things would just collect the water. And these are the cisterns. This is last year, 2010. And that's water in those cisterns. And you can see on the first picture on page 131, that's the water in the bottom there. Then you can see the arch going up there on the top of the photograph. If you look on the next photograph, I've got a better picture of the arch looking at the ceiling. Then you can see those holes or those squares in the ceiling. That is where they'd lower buckets from that up on top in Hadrian's day. That was the street level. And they'd lower buckets. It used to be open in Jesus' day. The Hasmoneans, this was just an open pool, an open cistern. People would just walk by, get water. It would just collect water into it. And that would be located right here. They also used that water to supply or fill a moat around Fort Antonia on the north side here. And this is the easiest place to attack Jerusalem. Over here, you've got the Hinnom Valley, or Kidron Valley, the Hinnom Valley. It's hard to come up and attack. But over here, they did everything they could, moats, walls, towers, to protect the city. And so that water was used as a moat. In Hadrian's day, they built that arch over the top. It's called Struthian's Pool. or the Struthian pool. I've never heard it pronounced. I don't know. You guys can read it right there. Struthian, is that how you'd say it? Okay, that's the correct way then. But I don't. It's Struthian's pool, and Hadrian, 135, built that arch up on top. So there's water. That's just one example of some water that was right here. But there's cisterns all the way underneath here. Now the question is, the Gihon Springs is a natural water source. It's coming up out of the ground. These right here, a lot of them they're just that. They're cisterns. They're collecting rainwater. So I can't tell you, obviously there must be some, but I'm not familiar with any kind of water source underneath there. And again, I almost think that would be the case because this is why the city was started right here, is because there's a natural water supply. These other things were built kind of to start collecting water so they could continue to live there. There was not, but there's got to be something there, but I don't know of anything offhand. It may be just connected to the Gihon Springs somehow. Okay, where are we at? 61. Okay, any other questions? Please feel free. Okay, now we're going to go back. What happens now in this book is we're back to the days of Abraham, the Jebusites, the Canaanites, and we're going to start going historically through all these pictures again. So we're basically in the Old Testament section right now. And again, we've looked at this before, but this is called the Jebusite Wall or the Milo. It's terrace. Milo refers to terraces. And this city, you look down here possibly, this is Nehemiah's wall, the city here. This is very similar. But it's not as simple as just a one wall going here. You're outside the city, you're inside the city. A lot of times, well, like Rahab in Jericho, she lived in the wall. And what would end up taking place is living in the wall doesn't mean she lived in the wall because the wall might be, 8 feet, 10 feet, 12 feet wide. She's not living in the wall. Her house would be then attached. Well, she couldn't get in the city. The city's full. So we'll build right outside the wall. In fact, you can see the remains of the houses at Jericho. You can see, Catherine Kenyon did the excavation. You can see the retaining wall that didn't fall down. You can see the walls of Jericho, the retaining wall. The rock walls are still there, like a terrace holding up the dirt. But on top of those walls would have been mud brick walls. Those are the walls that collapsed. The retaining walls that held the dirt up, they're still intact. So in a sense, the walls of Jericho didn't fall. But wait, the walls did, the retaining walls that held the dirt up, they're still there, you can still see them. But it was the walls that were built, that were standing on the retaining walls, those are long gone. But the point is up against those retaining walls, you can still see the walls or the structures of residences that were built up. In fact, you could very easily say this must be Rahab's house, or it could have been one of these houses could have been Rahab's. So once the people would build outside the city walls, then they'd eventually say, well, we need a wall. They'd, talk to their congressman, and he'd get a tax bill passed to expand and build another wall to protect the people that build outside the city walls. So now you've got the original wall, the houses or the residences that are outside, and then they've got another wall they've had built. And that would go two or three levels down as they continue to build and expand the city. And that's kind of what we're going to see here. This wall that you see right there, it's got several things in it. But it's originally is a retaining wall holding up some structures up above and holding up the wall that was built on top of it. It's called the Milo in the scriptures. It's a terraces and retaining walls that are supporting it. Catherine Kinron, there's her name, the second column. She excavated this and found this location and did some work on it in the 60s. And then Eliot Mazur, Benjamin Mazur's granddaughter. She's discovered now David's palace, which is up on top of that, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit. But anyway, what you're looking at right there at the bottom, I've got five things written there. Is again, you realize where this is at. I should probably tell you where this is at. This is right here above the Gihon Springs. It's right there. It's right here on the map. You understand what I'm saying? Where it's located. The first thing you see, it's called the glassy, the word G-L-A-C-I-S. The glassy, that's that steep sloped wall, so it's hard for someone to climb and attack. But it's called the Milo, and that would be built from like 1100 to 1000 B.C. That was built by the Jebusites in the days of the Judges, say, and David would have inherited it and built on it and added to it. The remains of residences from 1200 B.C., that are outside. We're going to turn the page here and look at it. You can see there are going to be some residences there that they can see that were built on the outside of this wall, which means there would have been a wall further down in the Kidron Valley helping protect them eventually. The retaining walls from 1200 B.C. Rooms from 700 to 586 B.C., clearly indicating the Babylonian destruction, the fire that they found in there. They even know who the houses belong to, Hiel, we'll look at that. And then the walls built by Nehemiah when he came by. And again, they didn't always say, well, let's build the walls at a different location. A lot of times the walls were built the first time in the best possible location. So when they come by and they rebuild again, they're just rebuilding on the same spot because of the ridge line or the bedrock line. And Nehemiah's walls is that very square, precise corner. Can you see almost right in the middle of the photograph? That would probably be, some of that is Hasmonean, and the higher part would be some Hasmonean building of it, and then Nehemiah's is the lower part. So you've got several things. You've got Jebusite or Canaanite building there. You've got some of David's work. You've got some of the days of Josiah, the king of Judah, being built in there. Nehemiah, Hasmonean time, all being built in on that Jebusite wall there, or the Milo. So turn the page now. We're going to get a little more detail on the Milo. Ahil, the house of Ahil. And this is a little diagram that I've got drawn here. And it helps you kind of identify. First, you got what is called the stepped stone structure. That is that glassy from, 1100, 1000 B.C. Now, David's palace is going to be right up on top of that. That's where David's palace is going to be located. You've got some walls there to the right from 445 B.C. and to the left, 445 B.C. Now, we're talking Nehemiah's time. And then the Hasmoneans are going to reinforce those walls after the days of the Greeks. Now, outside of the step stone structure, the walls of Ahil, how would you say that? Ahil probably. And if you look down underneath the big picture on the bottom, now we're looking at the house of Ahil. And a couple of things that you can notice right there, I'm going to just read through the details there. It's a four-roomed house, and you got to imagine the walls. You can see the walls there. Different. They're not real high, but they're the structure of the walls are going to be there. And again, you got to think, you got to be a little creative because these people didn't live in rocks, just like you don't live in boards. You live in a house with sheetrock walls and paint and pictures on the wall. Of course, they didn't have sheetrock and the paint like we would know it, but they didn't just pile up rocks and live in a cave. They would have had some kind of wooden structures because otherwise these things, how would this stuff burn? Everything was overlaid with wood. It was decorated somehow. They would do certain things with it so it looked like a house. Ezekiel talks about the plastered walls. They build a rock wall, but then they cover them up with plaster and paint them so it looked not like you live in a rock, but be painted of some sort. So again, this is what remains after, well, in this case, almost, in some cases, 3,000 years. Now, just imagine what your house will look like in 3,000 years after it's been burnt and destroyed by the Babylonians. I mean, the best thing we're going to have in my place is, well, this must be the garage found floor. It's like it's all cracked up concrete. That's probably the only thing that's going to remain, what I'm saying? Because the brick, the little bit of brick on the front, well, I got a brick house. No, that's brick front. And watch, it just falls off. I mean, the bricks are going to be long gone. And in this case, a lot of the good stones here would be reused. They'd be picked up, and you can find the stones from Herodian stones built other places. They'd haul them off and use them for something else. So, again, this is kind of misleading. It's like, man, that's not a very nice place to live. It's like just a bunch of rocks. Well, one of the things you can see there, you can see the walls. On the left side there, there's a little stairway, and that stairway would be then to go up on the top of the house or the second floor. They could sit up on the roof of their house and use it for grilling or sitting or sleeping, in the hot nights or something. If you turn the page, it mentions there about a stone with a hole in it. Turn the page. You can't see it in this picture, but you can definitely see it. I got a close-up photo right there, and there you have it. That was a little room with that block, that square block in it. And underneath that hole, that block is tipped over. You got to stand it up. And underneath that hole would be a cesspit. Or a cesspit. And there you got. That's your bathroom. Ahil had a bathroom in his four-room house. And he's going to a little room right there. And that is the stool right there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no flush there, But I was just looking at a picture last night of a place called Beth She'an, in up by Capernaum, not Capernaum, but more like Megiddo up in that area, over by the Jordan River. It's where King Saul's body was tacked to the wall. up on the tell, up on the remains. But the Romans came down, they built a new city there, and you can see that it's got a three-tiered amphitheater, but there's a bathhouse there that had just rows of stones. It was a latrine, and very clearly a latrine, and it's not in the book here, it's in another picture, but I mean, they've excavated, you know, bathrooms or latrines in these places that, again, once again, you know, you think about, oh, you know, going to a sporting event or something and just the rows of toilets, you know, that we would have in a facility like that. Well, these people, they got a big amphitheater together, three-tier to watch a play. You know, what did they do? They planned ahead and they had many, especially the Roman cities had that all taken care of. But nonetheless, let's go back and look at a Heel's house some more. It says there's a cesspit there. It was 6.5 feet deep with a stone toilet, had a flat roof. The next on page 62, the next picture there, that's a close-up of the massive Canaanite Jebusite stone structure that still remains. On top of that would be the Palace of David. The next picture on page 63, I'm looking down at that step stone structure, and kind of seeing the tiers of it coming down, the Milo. The bottom of the page, on page 63, I'm looking again there at a Heel's house from the top. We got a different angle on it. You can see the pillars standing there that were supporting the ceiling above it. And then on page 63, the top right, I've got the details of the house, how the house would have looked. You see, you got the stairs there going up to the roof. You see, you got the little toilet there on the bottom, you know, kind of in the middle to the bottom right. There's a little room there called the burnt room. Because in this room right here, it was burnt very badly, and it found some things remaining. I'm not sure if I've got any. I know I've got some stuff. Here, go to the next page. Here we go. Here we go. I've got three things written down there. Let's go to point one there. It says, in the middle terrace, a four-room house built in two levels, two ostraca, which are pieces of pottery broken from a vase or earthenware, were found with the name Ahil inscribed on them. So it was like some kind of a pot that had his name on it. So it was, had his name engraved in the pottery that was broken. So that's why they know it was his house. Number two, in the middle terrace, in the north right of the house of Ahil, was the burnt room that was showed signs of intense fire suffered during the Babylonian destruction in 586. The remains of the burnt wood included imported wood from northern Syria. So they found charred wood that wasn't native to Israel. It came out of Syria with carved palmlet patterns or an artistic design of a fan-shaped leaves of palm trees, furniture and parts of the roof beam that just caught on fire and just collapsed in. So again, they found some of the wood that I says that had been destroyed. They found some of it remaining there. Also found in this room were pottery, stone vessels, bone vessels, and a metal spoon. So it talks about pottery out of stone or bone. That means it was fairly carved, nice. So you got nice woodworking, carved, imported wood. Now realize where these people are living. The royal palace is up on the top of the royal palace is right there. That was David's palace that was handed down through the generations. That was the royal palace. When it talks about Jeremiah being thrown in a pit in the courtyard of the palace, it would be up there. In fact, they've excavated a pit that's right there in David, just outside of David's palace. There's some debate on how they're going to excavate it, but it's right by David's palace or the royal palace of the kings of Judah. It could very well be the pit or the cistern that Jeremiah was dropped down into. Well, nonetheless, what I'm saying is these people weren't, you know, just, you know, poor people, homeless people living outside the city walls. These are people living just within feet of the royal palace. And so, again, they probably would be, they're importing wood. They've got carved vessels out of bone and stone. Could be. It definitely, very good. It wouldn't be, anybody could look down on top of this roof. But, yeah, this could have been Bathsheba's house, no doubt. Exactly. Because, I mean, David's looking at his palace, looking over the Kidron Valley at Mount of Olives, and looks down. There's Bathsheba. I mean, just right there. So, I mean, yeah, so plus, I mean, he'd be a little bit, he's up here on this part of the city. So he's, you know, he's looking down on this. But a lot of these are, you know, it's going downhill. So he's still going to be above it. But in this case, he's looking out the well here. Look on page 65. I wrote on this, this is a view, the bottom picture on page 65. This is a view of the deep drop down into the Kidron Valley from the base of the stepstone structure. Imagine David and Joab looking up at the Jebusites who were on top of the stepstone structure. David and the Jebusites would have been down there looking up, and the Jebusites would have been laughing at him and go, listen, what are you guys doing? Even the blind and lame can defend this place. There's not a chance you're going to get in here as they look down the stepstone structure. Let's keep going. Let me go, because you said that about David. Let's go to, see if I can find the city of David. There we go. Page 73. Look on page 72. Now we're talking about David's. Now we're in David's palace. And I do have a book here, right here. Eliot Mazur, right here. This is the palace of King David. This is her excavation report on this place right here. So, I mean, we're not making stuff up. It's like, well, it could be. This is her report. It's got photos. It's got a lot of these walls that I try to identify here. She's done a better job of identifying, showing you pottery that was found in this location and a variety of other things. In fact, two of the guys that were princes or were involved in Jeremiah being dropped into the pit, their names are mentioned in Jeremiah. They have found, I can't tell you what it's called, but it's a boule. It's the clay impression of like a ring or something. You get your signet ring, and it's like your signature. You leave your impression in here on this piece of clay. It'd be a small piece of clay. Two guys, and I wrote a blog on it a couple years ago. I should get it out again. Two guys, their names are written on those clay. They're written, Jeremiah, the recording book of Jeremiah, the so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, boom, son of so-and-so, this is his name, and they found two of them. Eliot, she found two of them attesting to these men's names that threw David in the palace. And I'm sure it's in this book somewhere, or threw him in the pit. Here, you guys can't see this maybe, but right there, there's the artist's rendition of David standing in his palace looking over the Kidron Valley. He would have been standing right there, the picture on page 72, that would be kind of what he's doing right here. He'd be standing in his palace looking over the Kidron. The Temple Mount is right there to the left. You can see right there. Of course, it wouldn't be there in his day, but you see the corner of the temple, southeast corner of the Temple Mount, and he's looking over at the Mount of Olives. Looks like probably the southern ridge of the Mount of Olives. He's looking over the Kidron Valley. And so that, indeed, if Bathsheba's house was down there, I mean, he's just looking straight down at it right there outside the palace. And, you know, Uriah the Hittite, one of his top army officials, would maybe have had a fairly nice house there close to the palace. Anyway, there you can take a look at this. I should give you more information about that. Anyway, that's David's palace. We'll get to that in just a moment. Let's go back to page 63. We're still looking at the stepstone structure. And again, I've just given you, or 64, I'm just giving you a few of the details here. The third point right there on page 65 is in the lower terrace. You see, we're talking about the middle terrace, what we found there. We found a heel's house. We found the burnt house. And now, number three, in the lower terrace, 16 feet below the house of a heel, which is below the palace of David, was a narrow building where 51 boule, there you go, round clay seals with an impression affixed to a rolled document were found. The structure is called the House of Boule. Because, again, a lot of times they put these seals, and they'd have a string tied to them, and that string would then be tied around a scroll. And the seal would be not just sealed onto the scroll, but on a string wrapped around the scroll. And so it appears that the House of Boule would have been a place of official documents, where they would be taken, rolled up, and put here, because they just found the whole house is just full of these boule that were wrapped around documents or were part of attached documents. And here's exactly what I was trying to tell you. Here it is. Are you ready? One of the boule was impressed with the name Jeremiah, son of Shaphan, who was mentioned in Jeremiah 36, 9 through 12. Jeremiah was a scribe in the court of Jehoiakim during the king's fifth year, 604. Since the royal scribe's impression was found in this room of documents, we can infer that this burnt house of boule was some form of royal archive or public office. Other boule located here are impressed with the Hebrew names such as belonging to Ben-Ahiyu, son of Hushiah, belonging, and again, I'm not going to try to read all those names. He got them all belonging to, and they always have the guy's name and then the name of his father. There's all these boule. Now, that does not mention the two princes that I was trying to refer to. Here's some information here about, you can read some more about that. And any questions about that? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, now the term, the stepstone structure,
Yes.
Is that one of a kind, or is that indicative of many that were built on the hillside? Versus that indicative of many homes?
So the step stone structure is probably the Milo. That's the terrace going up. That's the glacis that's holding up the wall. And then the houses were built into it.
But, I mean, that's what we see here, like 61.
Did it go all the way around the city, you mean? Okay. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. This right here was built as a retaining wall, so it's going to be unique for its location in the city. But anytime you're going to build a wall, the wall on top of this, for example, you're going to have some kind of support structure underneath it holding up a wall. Sometimes you build right on the bedrock. You know, if there's a bedrock, you build right on the bedrock. But in this case, they're building somewhere where the bedrock wasn't supporting it. So then, of course, this would probably be, and I'm making this up, okay, this would probably be a building technique that they would use in certain areas. But as far as building houses outside of the walls, that was common. I mean, I think all the way around the city, as soon as you got that wall built for protection and the place was full, you're going to go outside the wall and build, which would then require another wall, so there'd be several walls. Does that answer your question at all? You don't look happy. Okay. Right above the Gion Springs. It would be right here. Let's see if I can find a... Right. Go to page 20, possibly. Page 20, we just got the modern city of Jerusalem map. And I know this is a good question, because I mean, I appreciate you asking this question. And you can see the modern city, the modern wall, you see the Temple Mount or the Dome of the Rock. But then south of the Temple Mount, there you've got that little oval circle, like that's a rough drawing of the location of the city of David. You can see the Hezekiah's tunnel going underneath there and stuff. You can see where it originates at, that little oval, that's the Gion Springs. But right above the Gion Springs, that would be the step stone structure. And above that would be David's palace. Do you see what I'm saying right there? I don't know if you can even read it, but it says David's palace.
If I might, step stone structure means just this one unique place in the whole area?
Right. Yeah, if you say the step stone, right, okay. If you say the step stone, I want to see is the step stone structure. They're going to take you to this location. It's not like...
Is that because it's the only one that's going to...
Right.
There could be other ones.
There could be other ones, right. But this is the only place like this. When I use the word glacis, that's a building technique. That's the sloped ramp. You're going to go to Ashkelon, and there's going to be a very good glacis of a sloped wall holding up the wall. Yes, but this is the stepstone structure. And biblically, when you read in the Bible, it is called Milo. We talk about the Milo in the Old Testament. This is the Milo. It's a retaining wall holding the dirt back and then supporting the wall on top of it. And it's the Gion Springs are right. The Gion Springs are just, if I'm looking at that picture right here, it's just to the left of that picture. It's down. You got to go down in the Kidron Valley to get to the Gion Springs, but it's right down there. You could look, David could look out of his palace, look right down at the towers protecting the Gion Springs. Does that help you at all? Okay, I don't feel like I've done a good job here. I probably need a better map. Yeah, and yes. In fact, I've got a... Okay, here we go. Let's do this. Go to page 70. There you go. All right, here. Okay, there on page, I've got, so these are models now. And actually, look on page 71. And there you've got a picture. Now, this is a picture I took of a picture. I was going through some tour. I think this is in the Citadel has got a display. So I just took a picture of the image that they've got there, and then I labeled it. But there you can see it. This is very, very good. So you notice the north. See where north is at, the top right corner. And then you see Mount Moriah. This is 1000 B.C. Now remember, 1000 B.C., there's no palace, or there's no temple. That's David's going to buy Mount Moriah from one of the Jebusites. He's using it as a threshing floor. That's his farm, okay? And it's a high place. So that's Mount Moriah. You see that? And then you got the space there, the Ophel in between Mount Moriah, and then the Jebusite city of Salem. And then you can see right there, I've got the Jebusite stepstone structure. I've got a pointed there. Is that line? Now notice the wall. The wall goes down and around. It does support a wall at some point. And again, this is one artist's rendition of it. Some artists, they've got that wall coming right down on top of the oaf or on top of the stepstone structure, and it just continues all the way down, and it's built further. Each wall continues down. But then you see David's palace would have been inside up there on the top. That would have been the fortress. And again, the reason the fortress is there now, at any time you're going to have to stop me and ask me a question. But the reason that fortress is at that part of the city is, again, you've got the Kidron Valley on the east. You've got the Hinnom Valley cutting across the south. The Central Valley going down the west side of the city. It's going to be hard to attack. You're going to have to run up out of the valley to attack the city. So they put the fortress and the towers and the military and the palace there on the north side. So when you attack the city, you've got to come through the marine barracks to get into the city. And so that's kind of part of that reason there. That's always been the weakest part of the city as far as an attack. And that's where, that is even when David took the city, he didn't say, well, you know, this would be a good place to build my palace. This is where that was the stronghold. That was the Jebusite stronghold. He just took over the Jebusite stronghold and remodeled it into his palace. So again, that would always have been the fortification of the city. Does that help at all? Okay, I dropped down. I got a close-up on the bottom of page 71 in the right bottom corner there. Now I kind of zoomed in on that, cropped it out, and now you can see even a closer image of the stepstone structure and where David's palace would have been up on top of it. Today, and I don't have a picture here in the book. I do somewhere. I'm sure I've got a picture somewhere here, but I know I've got one on the computer. I've got a picture. You can stand on the Temple Mount. Excuse me. You can stand on the Mount of Olives looking across the Kidron Valley at the Temple Mount and just do like this and see the stepstone structure. I mean, it's not like, in fact, there's a video online right now that it's me and Tony. I'm looking right here and we're talking, I'm looking, we're pointing. I says, Tony, can you show, where can you find the stepstone structure or the Jebusite wall? She goes, yeah, it's right there. They kind of zoom in on it. We're kind of talking about it. So you can see it very clearly from there. Does that help? Is it quarter after? Okay, well, we'll quit. We'll quit. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your attention. We'll continue through the book. And when we get done with this book, this is our schedule. When we finish the book, we're going to go into the Jerusalem University homework that we'll have. And people can, even if you're not going, you just still go through that if you like to. At some point here, when I feel confident, I figure out I can get this set up right and make it interesting. I'm going to bring a projector and I'm just going to flash through a bunch of black and white photos. I don't want to do it yet because I want you to get a little more familiar with some things so you know what you're looking at. Otherwise, you're just looking at stuff. It's like, and I got to explain it. This way, oh, this is the stepstone structure, although I don't have any of those. But this is the Damascus Gate, or this is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in under Turkish control. We got pictures of that I found of Allenby of the English when the English took over in 1917. Of him outside the Jaffa Gate, and then when he comes in the Jaffa Gate. In fact, we put a video up. Did you guys see, anybody been watching that at all? I put some videos up. Okay. But there's actual black and white footage from 1917 of Allenby coming in, shaking people's hands, and someone filmed it. It's just black and white film from the early 1970s, which is kind of interesting. Then he goes up on the steps of the Citadel, and he gives a religious tolerance speech, how they're going to honor all the holy sites and no one's going to have to be persecuted, and they're now the English are in charge, and things start really opening up as far as freedom over there in Jerusalem. Okay, I'll pray, and you're free to go. Father, do again thank you for the chance to meet and talk about these things. We thank you for the research that people have committed their lives to, that we can look into these things. We do ask that it would strengthen our faith and also give us insight into your word. Again, we thank you for the chance to be here in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you very much. Grab some of these books if you want to, and we've got some other things. The Nea Church is over here. Here's an article on David's Palace and other things that we've got. Help yourself, please. Oh, just probably 2007, probably when I went.